Welcome to the SunAware CD. I'm Dr. Joyce Starr, founder of StarPublications.com and RightsRadio.com, where rights to accurate life-saving information have a permanent address. And there are few wellness topics more vital for your life than prevention of skin cancer. My guest today is Mary Mills Barrow. Mary is the author of Sun Protection for Life, your guide to a lifetime of healthy and beautiful skin. She's also co-founder of Coolabar, a company that specializes in sun protection clothing. Mary is spearheading a national campaign to have SunAware adopted as the keystone message for preventing and detecting skin cancers. Mary, what is SunAware and what does it stand for? Where did the idea come from?
Simply, the idea did come from Coolabar. Our customers let us know that they didn't know how to protect themselves from the harm caused by UVR, and we received endless phone calls and emails asking for advice.
Why is it so important to protect yourself from the sun?
Well, besides premature aging, which is the most obvious harm caused by the sun, the numbers of diagnosed skin cancers is escalating at nearly epidemic levels, with melanoma, the worst type, often being fatal. In fact, while the death rates for other common cancers such as breast cancer, colon, and prostate cancer are declining, the death rates for melanoma have increased by nearly 30% in the past 25 years.
And SunAware helps prevent these cancers?
That's what we're hoping. SunAware is an acronym for 5 very easy to remember steps for skin cancer prevention and detection. SunAware, AWARE, stands for avoid unprotected UV exposure at any time and seek shade. W, wear sun protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses. A, apply sunscreen with an SPF 30 and reapply every 2 hours while exposed. R, routinely check your skin and report any suspicious changes to a healthcare professional. And E, educate your family and community about the need for sun protection. This acronym was what I originally used as a framework in the book Sun Protection for Life. As a framework, it captures leading-edge advice coming from every different organization around the world that's concerned with skin cancers, and then it's organized so that a layperson can easily understand it.
I understand that since publication, SunAware has been used in schools to create lessons about skin cancer prevention and detection. Why is it so important that children be taught how to protect themselves?
Well, children should really be taught the earlier the better, because everyone, regardless of age or color, should be using sun protection to avoid getting skin cancers.
The next 5 sections of this CD will discuss each step in the SunAware process and how to best follow the vital steps in SunAware. Sections 7 and 8 will then highlight related issues, including the controversy about vitamin D, how best to get your daily dose, and why tanning beds should be banned from general use. If you have any questions after listening, visit Coolabar.com for further information. Section 2, avoid unprotected exposure at any time and seek shade. What is it about the sun that makes it so dangerous? Why is it so important for us to understand this?
The sun produces ultraviolet radiation, UVR, which is a carcinogenic, which means that it causes cancer.
How can something that feels so good for you be so bad for you at the same time?
You know, you're right. It does feel good. But when UVR strikes the skin, it scatters, it's reflected, or it's absorbed. The UVR that's absorbed causes damage to the cell's DNA, which in turn triggers a response like proliferation, toxic change, mutation, or death.
How do we know these changes are happening?
Clearly, we can see the damage when our skin gets red or when it's tanned. Doctors actually view tans as a symptom of skin damage. It is a delayed reaction that becomes visible about 72 hours after exposure, and it is our first clue that UVR has triggered that bad response in our skin cells. The tan is a result of an increased production of melanin, its proliferation, which is one of the cellular responses to the absorption of UVR. We also see damage when moles and freckles change, which is the easiest way to recognize a potential skin cancer. However, going back to AVOID, the first step in the SunAware acronym is to understand that you should avoid the unprotected exposure to UVR at any time and seek shade.
Are you talking about understanding the difference between UVA and UVB?
I am.
Is one stronger than the other?
Well, both are potentially lethal when they're absorbed by the skin. Even in small amounts, when UVA and UVB get into the chromosomes and the cell proteins, they become a major threat to your skin. UVA does account for most sunburn and the vast majority of skin damage, including damage to your eyes, premature aging, and most skin cancers. But this is very interesting, and this is a relatively new information. UVA, which is the less powerful of the two sun rays, which is why it does not appear to burn, and this is a very, very big but, UVA is shown to penetrate the skin more deeply, which means that it harms the DNA and it compromises the immune system. And with a compromised immune system, this may possibly cause skin cancers to appear far more quickly and to spread more quickly.
But doesn't the tanning bed industry advertise UVA as a harmless way to get a tan?
It does, and it's a terrible misperception. And we'll discuss this more fully in Section 7. But the numbers of skin cancers among young women who've used tanning beds has grown faster than in any other segment of the population. And hundreds of studies are beginning to show the link between UVA and these cancers.
So there is definitely a connection between tanning beds and skin cancers.
There appears to be an obvious one, and everyone should avoid using them. But let's get back to the more general advice about preventing skin cancers by avoiding the sun.
Okay, are there times during the day when the sun is simply so strong that we should stay inside?
For several years, and I think most people listening will remember, the advice was to stay indoors between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. But what became clear is that this is impractical advice, and so it was being ignored. A more reasonable approach is to know that you can always enjoy being outdoors if you use the right protection. To do this, the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Weather Service provide a daily UV index so that everyone can make informed decisions about what kind of protection they'll need that day.
What exactly is the UV index?
It's a computer model that uses multiple variables to determine the next day's maximum UVR level or to forecast peak UV hours. The variables include things like the ozone, elevation, latitude, time of year, and time of day. The index is then given and interpreted for advice that's been agreed to by organizations like the World Health Organization. When the UV range is less than 2, you need little or no protection, and you can go outside safely. But once it starts reaching a UV range of 3 to 5, you start needing some protection. From 3 to 5, you need moderate protection, which means you should seek shade during midday hours, wear sun protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses, and you should apply sunscreen to all exposed skin and reapply every 2 hours. The next level up, which is 6 to 7 on a UV index, is high, and it means that you should follow the above advice that I just gave you. But then when it hits 8 to 10, you should take extra precautions such as avoiding going outside. A UV range of 11 is extreme and it requires caution, including staying inside.
Generally speaking, in the United States, when is the UV index highest? When should we be most careful?
The intensity of UV exposure is notably higher during the hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., which is what made that earlier advice correct. But now the World Health Organization and other organizations have changed the advice to unprotected exposure. You should avoid unprotected exposure at any time, and you should use consistent protection all day and enjoy your time outdoors.
Now tell me, where can we find the UV index?
It's not hard to find. Radio and TV weather reports often include it, and they explain what it means and what methods of protection should be used. The Internet weather forecasts also use it, and it's usually listed with the weather reports in daily newspapers.
So should we avoid unprotected exposure when we're outside? But what if we're sitting inside? Do we need to protect ourselves inside if, for example, we're sitting in front of a window?
It's a good question because we don't often worry about sunlight when we're inside. However, indirect exposure can still be harmful. For example, UVA does pass through glass. So if you're sitting inside by a window, you will want to be aware that you are exposed and you may want to take some precautions.
You just called this indirect exposure. Are there other ways to get indirect exposure?
There are. Both the sun rays, both UVA and UVB, will bounce from surfaces like sand, water, or snow. So it's important to use several different methods of protection at one time.
What about shade?
Shade helps provide protection, but it should never be considered absolute protection, and here's why. Shade structures like an umbrella or a canopy that are used on school grounds or in parks or at home will block direct rays from the sun coming directly down. However, there are indirect rays that are created when these same sun rays bounce upward from a reflective surface, which means they can get underneath that shade structure that you're using. So for protection, even if you are in the shade, you need other methods like sun-protective clothing and sunscreen.
In summary, the first letter of this five-step acronym is A for avoid. Avoid unprotected exposure at any time and seek shade. Section 3, wear sun-protective clothing. SunAware provides five easy-to-remember steps for skin cancer prevention and detection. We've discussed A, avoid unprotected exposure at any time and seek shade. Now we're going to discuss W, wear sun-protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses. Interestingly, this advice is now positioned before the advice to use sunscreen. Mary, tell us why clothing comes first and what makes this clothing sun-protective.
The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Dermatologists, along with most other organizations concerned with skin cancers, recommend sun-protective clothing as the first defense for a lot of reasons. It is consistently effective, it's less messy, it's economical, and it's environmentally friendly. Furthermore, for multiple reasons, sunscreens are thought to be less effective than once believed.
Tell us what sun protection clothing is. Is it different from regular, everyday clothing?
It is very different from regular, everyday clothing. And a lot of research has gone into understanding this difference. The research started in the early 1990s, when there was an epidemic of skin cancers in Australia, and the Anti-Cancer Council in Australia conducted a joint study that found that not all clothing provides effective protection against sun rays. Many summer materials, and this is quite interesting, many summer materials like T-shirts have protection factors that are as low as from 5 to 10. Similar results were found in a study from Germany and in the ongoing studies that are done by serious sun protection clothing manufacturers like Coolabar.
So how do we know which garments or fabrics are sun protective?
There is a list of factors that's provided by the Australian experts, which help determine whether a garment will effectively block UVR. Some of these factors include weave density, color, fabric tension, moisture content, the condition of the clothing, the design, and the comfort of the clothing. Sun protective clothing should be light. It should be cool and comfortable so you can wear it and stay cool in hot conditions.
Are there labels or standards to tell the consumer if the garment is sun protective?
You know, standards for sun protective clothing are voluntary, although there is a movement by the FDA to make them regulatory. In 1992, again in Australia, regulatory standards for sun protective clothing were introduced, rating the garments according to a UPF, or ultraviolet protection factor, which is very similar to an SPF. In 1998, these standards were adopted in the U.S. Further, in the U.S., the American Society for Testing and Materials developed standards simulating the sun protective garment's life cycle and for labeling a garment claiming to be sun protective. In other words, garments tested for UPF levels should be washed many times and then retested so that the material is at its very weakest point and the consumer knows that even at its weakest point, the garment will still be sun protective. UPF rates. What UPF does is it rates the amount of sun rays, both UVA and UVB, that's blocked by the fabric. If the fabric is rated UPF 30, then it's absorbing or blocking 29 out of 30 units of UVR, or 97% of the UVR, which is very high. UPF, like SPF, blocks both sun rays. It blocks both the UVA and the UVB. SPF, which is what you find on the labels of sunscreen, measures only how much UVB is blocked. So sun-protective clothing is more effective as it blocks both. Plus, it's less expensive, it's less messy, it's more reliable, which are all huge factors when trying to protect children or people who spend a lot of time outdoors.
What should you look for when you're buying sun-protective clothing?
Well, there are a few different things to look for. First, consider the activity for which you will be wearing the garment, and that will help you determine the best design. The most common sun-protective designs are things like surf shirts or rash shirts, which offer superior sun protection to the upper body and can be worn swimming. The best surf shirts or rash shirts are made from polyester, so they're chlorine resistant, and they're rated to block 97% of UVR, which is an ultraviolet protection factor of 30+. Then there are also garments called neck-to-knees, which look like wetsuits and are made like a rash shirt to be worn in the water. There are athletic shirts that are worn for activities like jogging, hiking, or bike riding and are made with light wicking fabric with plenty of ventilation. Wicking means it takes the moisture from your skin away from your skin so that you don't feel so hot. Sun-protective everyday shirts and blouses also have special features like fold-up collars or roll-down cuffs that are stylish and lightweight with plenty of ventilation. So here you've chosen which activity you're buying the garment for. Then next you should look at the labels and make sure the garment's been tested. And this is very important. Coolabar, for example, provides labels that give UPF ratings of 50+. As well as tests that are given for the garment life. Further, it's good to note if the manufacturer has the approval of any of the organizations concerned with skin cancers. Again, using Coolabar as an example, their label shows it has a seal of recommendation from the Skin Cancer Foundation, and it has a seal of recognition from the American Academy of Dermatology. These seals are important as it shows that not only are the tests performed on all the materials, but the design complies with the advice given by the doctors and the scientists.
I know it's a growing market, but who is purchasing sun protective clothing? Will it be a new fashion?
I think it might be. Right now, more and more people are beginning to understand how important sun protection is. And clothing is ultimately less expensive than sunscreens, and it's more environmentally friendly. So I do think it's become a more fashionable and a much more practical way to go. Regardless, parents should buy it for children, which would be most helpful for the prevention of skin cancers if children will learn early in their lives that they should be using it. In Australia, again, as an example, most children wear sun-protective swimwear to the beach, and they wear sun-protective garments that are included in their school uniforms.
We've talked about clothing. Now, what about hats? Why the 3-inch brim?
Well, the 3-inch brim covers the back of the neck, the forehead, the ears, the nose, and the cheeks. Anything less does not. This is based on studies made in England and in Australia of hats of all different shapes and sizes. So do not think that you can use a baseball cap for sun protection, although I would say that using a little protection is better than none. Instead, though, I think you should find a hat with a 3-inch brim and use it. Hats should be used at every age.
And the materials used in hats, what should we look for?
Well, again, weave is very important. Straw hats, for example, while they've been a favorite for many generations, do not offer much protection because the UVR passes right through the loose weave, and the straw reflects the UVR that's bouncing from surfaces, and then it comes back down on your face. Straw hats that are lined are more effective. Dark hats and hats that curve downwards like bonnets are the most effective. When you're looking for a hat for sun protection, like clothing, check the label or the hang tag. The hat should be rated to block 97% UVR or more. This means that the manufacturer has sewn the hat together with materials that have been tested and or the manufacturer has lined the hat with tested material. We're hoping that school policies will start encouraging the use of hats. In Australia, children do not even go outside at recess unless they have on a hat. Wearing a hat is part of being aware. It's part of being aware of the need for sun protection.
Wear sun protection clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim, and sunglasses. Well, tell us a little bit about sunglasses.
All right, and here again, this is a matter of checking the labels. There are millions of pairs of sunglasses sold in the United States each year, but not all of them will protect your eyes. The damage caused by the sun includes cataracts and melanoma of the retina. Sunglasses help prevent these conditions, but it's very, very important to choose the right ones.
And what should we look for?
Well, non-prescription sunglasses, fortunately, are regulated as medical devices by the FDA. The labeling, however, is voluntary. So look to see that there is a label. All the better manufacturers will include one. If the standards have been met, the codes are listed. Be sure to find sunglasses that block 99.5% of UVR, both sun rays, UVA and UVB, and be sure that the glasses fit you properly. Further, there are a few rules of thumb to know about sunglasses. For example, sunglasses with lens tints that are too light will not block the glare. The frame should fit comfortably on your face, and it shouldn't be too tight over your ears. Wrap-around frames offer the best UVR protection. You should also know that sunglasses cannot protect against intense light sources such as sun lamps, lasers, welding torches, or solar eclipses. Special lenses are made for these conditions that meet very different standards, so be sensible and don't rely on regular sunglasses for those. And finally, children, including infants, should wear sunglasses routinely when they go outside. If you make sure of this, and if you wear sunglasses, they will follow your lead, and they will do so easily.
What should parents try to say to their children when they're talking about sun protective clothing? What type of message should we be giving our children?
I think the best thing parents can do is set examples. If parents are wearing sun-protective clothing, if parents are wearing hats and sunglasses, small children particularly will view this as normal behavior, and they too will start wearing sun protective clothing. In terms of why they are wearing sun protective clothing, I think students of all ages will begin to hear more and more in school that UVR can damage their skin.
To summarize, we've just discussed the letter W in the acronym SunAware. W, wear sun protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses. Section 4, apply broad spectrum sunscreen with an SPF 30+ before exposure and reapply every 2 hours while exposed. Where does a person start? The past 30 years have been filled with ever-changing advice about sunscreens. Is there finally an answer? Should we wear sun protective clothing and then apply sunscreen to the skin that's left exposed?
I think with all the evolving science, this is the most responsible and the most practical solution. There's no question that sunscreens have been and continue to be a vital method of sun protection. However, having said that, it's become clear that the improper use of sunscreens may in fact be contributing to the rising number of diagnosed skin cancers. And there's also no question that it's very hard for the average person to fully understand how sunscreens are meant to be used. After all, what exactly is an SPF? How much sunscreen should be applied at one time? Are lotions for children different than lotions for adults? Can sunscreen be used in the water? Is it important if the skin is already tan, and so on and so on? It's no wonder that sun protective clothing is now considered the best method of sun protection, with sunscreen used only on the skin left exposed, which would be the face, hands, and tops of feet, and perhaps the tops of ears if you've got on a baseball cap.
Mary, can we put this in historical context?
I'm glad you asked. Because the history of sunscreen does give us some idea why they are important and why they are confusing. Between the 1950s and the 1970s, research around the world firmly established the relationship between UVR exposure and skin cancers. The public at that point began hearing more and more about the need to protect skin from burning, and the pharmaceutical industry developed many new and wonderful products promising protection. In the early 1970s, an SPF system was introduced in the United States by the Food and Drug Administration. An SPF indicates the amount of protection a sunscreen offers, but the public misunderstood it to be a method to calculate how many more hours you could be in the sun without burning. An SPF is as high as 50, and people assumed that one application would last all day. Few people paid any attention to the directions to reapply every 2 hours while exposed. By the 1990s, advertising had made people increasingly aware of the need to use sun protection, especially for children. But the whole topic of sunscreens was already confusing. The American Academy of Dermatology worked tirelessly to get clarification for the public. But when the FDA, the dermatologists, and the sunscreen companies argued about how high SPF ratings should go, the public just scratched their collective head and figured the higher the better. So sunscreens were lotions, and some sunscreens were gels, and some were sprays, and you can only guess at which one worked best. Sunscreen had been developed based on a scientific belief that only the burn from UVB was harmful. So then the tanning salons began growing by advertising that UVB was bad, but hey, UVA is fine because it doesn't burn you. And this is an argument they continue to put forward today. There was some mention of skin cancers, but most people believed that by using sunscreen, they were keeping their skin young and they were keeping it healthy. By the year 2000, things began to get more clarified, and some scientists made the argument that sunscreen use was actually having the unintended effect of increasing skin cancer rates. So for 10 years, we've been trying to get further clarity. And I believe the best answer is seen in the order of priority in SunAware. wear sun protective clothing as the first line of defense, and then use sunscreens only for the small areas of skin that are left exposed.
But there are dozens of different kinds of sunscreens. What kinds are best?
This is personal preference, but personally I prefer sunscreens that contain zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. These products are what are called broad spectrum, which mean they block both UVA and UVB, and they've gained popularity since the zinc is now broken down into microfine particles that are almost invisible on the skin. I also do want to state, though, emphatically, that people of all colors should use broad-spectrum sunscreens with an SPF 30 or higher. As I mentioned earlier, skin cancers happen to everyone of all ages and all colors.
And is it really practical to think we will always apply sunscreen 20 minutes before going outside?
It is hard. So I recommend getting into a habit of applying the sunscreen in the morning before leaving the house. Now, I do know that some makeups include an SPF number, but application of that makeup would have to be very thick for it to work, which is a look that most women want to avoid. So it's better to apply sunscreen first. Let it get absorbed by the skin and then apply your makeup. If you are going to be outside, you will need to reapply the sunscreen every 2 hours while exposed, as the ingredients in sunscreens do begin to break down once they start blocking the UVR. So this would mean using less foundation or makeup, and then so that you don't have to wipe it off, and so that you can then reapply the sunscreen throughout the time you're outside.
What about children? Should children use sunscreens, and if so, at what age should they start?
I've done some research about this because this is a question that comes up quite a lot. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends sun protective clothing as the first line of defense when children are exposed to the sun. Sunscreen can then be used on the smaller exposed areas, and children as young as 6 months old can use sunscreen, but it's best to test it first on a very, very small area of the skin. Even younger babies can and should use sunscreen if no other protection is available, but covering a baby with clothing or light blankets is the best method of protection. Unfortunately, many schools do not allow children to apply sunscreens during school hours, and this I really strongly feel is a mistake. Children should be putting it on routinely before they go outside to play or for their sports, and we need, as part of the national campaign, to make these kind of changes in schools and in our public policies.
Tell us again how to use sunscreen, especially if you're applying it on a child.
Well, firstly, always use broad-spectrum sunscreen with an SPF 30 or higher. Then remember that sunscreens would lose their active ingredients over time, so don't use sunscreens that have been sitting on a shelf all winter. Throw it out and get a new bottle. When you apply it, make sure to use an ample amount and apply it evenly. The rule of thumb is that 2 jiggers full of sunscreen is about what you will use for every body application. You should apply it 20 minutes before going outside and then reapply it every 2 hours while exposed, and more often if you've been swimming. Now, I'll back up a little bit on the advice is to apply it 20 minutes before going outside, but I think a lot of people find that impractical. It is important to get the sunscreen on before you go outside, but it is more important that while you're out there, to reapply it every 2 hours because the ingredients do break down. It also takes, because it takes so much sunscreen for effective protection if you're using it all over your body, I strongly recommend that people really rely more on sun protective clothing. Use sun protective clothing because it's more consistently effective, it's less expensive, and it's less messy, which are certainly attributes if you're trying to put it on a child. Use the two together for the right balance of protection.
Section 5. Routinely check your skin and report any changes to your health care provider. Does everyone need to check their skin? What about people of color?
Everyone needs to understand their skin. what type of skin they have, and what risk factors they have for skin cancers. People of color are, yes, less likely to get skin cancers, but they do get them, and they do need the same education about how to prevent them as people with lighter color skins.
You mentioned skin type. What is a skin type?
There's a system for classifying skin based on a person's response to sun exposure. Skin types are ranked from type 1, which is the most sun sensitive and the most likely to be damaged by sun exposure, to type 6, which is the least likely to experience sun damage. Most people in this country are type 3, which is they sometimes burn moderately, they tan moderately and uniformly. However, don't be lured into thinking that if you're a type 4 to 6, if you have darker skin, or that you tan and never burn, that you don't need protection. This isn't correct. No one is immune to the damage caused by UVR, and everyone needs to have some protection. Having said that, melanoma is found most often in fair-skinned people, those with skin type 1 or 2, if they have very little pigmentation and therefore almost no defense against UVR. These are people generally of Celtic, Scandinavian, or Northern European descent. Other risk factors include medical history. Skin cancer, particularly melanoma, tends to run in families, which indicates an inherited tendency. So be aware of your family's medical history and tell your doctor. If you have a lot of moles, whether they are dysplastic or ordinary, you are more susceptible to melanoma than the average person. However, remember that melanoma and any other kind of skin cancer, which is found and treated early, is almost always curable, which is why a routine body check is crucial.
How do we do it? How do we perform a whole body check, and what are we looking for?
Well, first, get into a routine of checking your skin and your family's skin. Men are notoriously bad about doing this, so women, do it for them. Get to know freckles and moles, take pictures of them, and keep records in a notebook so that you'll notice if they're changing. There are websites like the Melanoma International Foundation and the Skin Cancer Foundation that have illustrations for how to do a complete body check. These are very helpful, as they remind you to check areas like your scalp and your groin. Skin cancers can be found anywhere, even in places that have not been exposed to the sun. And teach your children how to check themselves. The Skin Cancer Foundation actually recommends that parents teach children as young as 4 years old how to check their skin and to establish a routine for doing so. The American Academy of Dermatology has created the ABCDEs of skin cancer that will help you determine if there is actually a problem. So it's worth going online for a copy of these things.
It sounds a little complicated, is it? How long does it take to do a body check?
It's really not complicated, and it only takes about 10 minutes. Then if you do find something suspicious, don't wait. That's a very, very important piece of advice. Do not wait if you find that your skin is changing. Tell your dermatologist or your healthcare provider. Remember that most skin cancers are curable if they're caught early. However, when you're making an appointment, and this is also very important, when you're making an appointment, be sure to tell them why you are calling. Tell them that you have found a change in your skin and you want it checked for cancer. Most dermatologists will then try to see you immediately. Many dermatologists, particularly those in the Sun Belt, leave time at the end of the day to see possible new melanoma cases. Be aware that as the number of skin cancers increases, and they will over the next decade, you may have to call more than one doctor in order to get an appointment. If you do find that you have skin cancer, go to the websites of the American Academy of Dermatology, the Skin Cancer Foundation, or the Melanoma International Foundation for very, very helpful information and advice. This can be reassuring and helpful, and it will be good for when you have to make any kinds of decisions.
Section 6. Educate your family and community about the need for sun protection. Why is a call for education important enough to be part of the acronym?
The education about skin cancers in the United States has been piecemeal at best and completely ineffective at worst. Skin cancers cause disfigurement and loss of life. Skin cancer is diagnosed more often than any other cancer, yet there's little government-funded education. Skin cancer costs this country billions of dollars every year in diagnosis and treatment. Truly, given all of this, and the fact that it's a growing concern, education about skin cancer has really become a social responsibility. The biggest lesson we can learn from the success of the Skin Cancer Prevention Foundation in Australia is that we need one message that is reinforced with the backing from the government and from the media and from the schools and from individual institutions. I honestly believe SunAware is that message, and I believe that it's vital to get every organization concerned with skin cancers to endorse and adopt it. Several organizations, including the Dermatology Nursing Association, the Children's Melanoma Prevention Foundation, and the Melanoma International Foundation, already have endorsed it and already use it. This acronym's been reviewed by experts, and it's been used in schools. The Children's Melanoma Prevention Foundation has introduced SunAware in the schools all over New England. There are children's books using the SunAware acronym, and there are lessons using the acronym as a framework. However, until SunAware or any other message is adopted nationally and is getting the backing from the government and media, it won't get the attention from the individuals who need it. This wouldn't be as hard as it sounds, as financing for such a campaign could be accomplished by taxing the use of tanning beds. A 2% tax on this more than $8 billion industry could provide more than $100 million a year, enough for programs, media exposure, and the administrative cost of collecting the tax. I do believe education for others about how to prevent and detect skin cancers is a social responsibility. Start with one common message to eliminate the confusion, and then back it up with as much information as needed.
So let's review. SunAware stands for 5 easy, proactive steps everyone should follow to help prevent and detect skin cancers. A. Avoid unprotected exposure at any time and seek shade. W. Wear sun protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses. A. Apply broad spectrum sunscreen with SPF 30 or more, 20 minutes before exposure, and reapply every 2 hours while exposed. R. Routinely check your whole body for changes in your skin and report any change to your health care provider. E. Educate your family and community about the importance of skin cancer prevention and detection. In the last 2 sections, we will discuss other topics that are directly related to the effects of UV exposure, vitamin D, and the use of tanning beds. Section 7, tanning beds. Let's go back to tanning beds. You said we could fund a campaign against skin cancers by taxing the tanning bed industry. Would this be similar to the taxes on cigarettes, which fund the anti-smoking campaign?
Absolutely. That's right. It is, however, a tough political issue because, unlike the tobacco industry, tanning parlors are usually owned by individuals, and no politician wants to be seen as adding more taxes.
But why are tanning beds dangerous, and are they more dangerous than sun exposure?
I actually tell my daughter and her friends that tanning beds are cancer beds. And yes, I believe that when they are used without the supervision of a doctor for medical purposes, tanning beds can be far more dangerous than UV exposure. Tanning beds have been around since the 1970s, but they didn't become truly popular until about 1990. And at that time, there appeared to be valid reasons for their popularity. At that time, there was a growing body of scientific evidence that UVB rays of the sun were highly damaging. And they are. They burn. So it was then believed that by eliminating UVB, you could get what's called a safe tan by being exposed only to UVA. This is a terrible misperception, as we now know, because UVA penetrates the skin cells more deeply, triggering biological reactions, including immune suppression and cell alterations that lead to cancer. Another common misperception that helped build the tanning bed industry was that a base tan would provide protection against burning, and therefore it would protect the skin. What we do now know is that any tan, regardless of how it's acquired, is considered damaged skin and provides an SPF level of only 2 or 4, which is not considered protection at all. The tanning bed industry grew as these misperceptions spread. Fluorescent lights boosting the wonders of UVA or the need for a healthy base tan have proliferated. There are now claims that we need UV exposure to help produce vitamin D or to relieve depression, and that the tanning bed is the best way to do it. So again, this industry has saturated the media, boasting a safe way to do both. These are also misperceptions. Yes, as we will discuss in Section 8, we do need short exposures to the sun to help produce vitamin D, but only early in the morning or very late in the afternoons for a very few minutes. And yes, studies do show that endorphins are released, making us feel good and relaxed when using the tanning bed. But, and this is a very, very big but, that short-term good feeling can lead to a life-threatening cancer very quickly. So for emphasis, let's back up a little bit to how we got here. In the late 1980s, there were fewer than 10,000 businesses that owned tanning beds. By 2008, despite the solid scientific evidence that tanning is linked to both melanoma and squamous cell skin cancers, this has become a multi-billion dollar industry in the United States. There are so many tanning bed facilities that studies are now being undertaken to determine where they are most concentrated, probably so cancer rates can be predictive. Here are some of the present-day facts. 20% of adults in this country aged from 18 to 29 use indoor tanning, and those rates are the highest among adolescents, with older teenage girls using them most often. Now, you have that 20%, and then you find that according to the Skin Cancer Foundation, nearly 30 million people use indoor tanning beds every year, and 2.3 million of them are teens. 71% of tanning salon patrons are girls and women aged 16 to 29, and we now know that the first exposure to tanning beds in youth increases melanoma risk by 75%. Between 1973 and 2001, melanoma incidence in those under 20 years old rose 2.9%. Melanoma is 7 times more common between the ages of 10 and 20 than it is between the ages of 0 and 10, and 90% of pediatric melanoma cancers occur in girls between the ages of 10 and 19. So connect the dots. Tanning beds are giving cancer, and the most deadly kind of skin cancer, melanoma, to our children. As part of the SunAware campaign or any skin cancer prevention and detection campaign, we need to educate ourselves and our children about the harm associated with tanning beds. The American Medical Association and the American Academy of Dermatology and other organizations are urging legal action that would ban the sale and the use of tanning equipment for non-medical purposes. Other countries do it. France bans children from using indoor tanning devices and has done so for years. In England, suits are brought against parents and tanning bed operators under child abuse laws to try to stop use by teenagers and children. And here, several states, including Texas, Illinois, and Wisconsin, have laws to prohibit children from using tanning beds. No one should use them without a medical reason. No one should allow a child to use them. And teenagers should be clearly warned. Tanning beds cause cancer.
Section 8, vitamin D. What about vitamin D? We've talked so much about protecting ourselves from the sun. Don't we need sunlight to produce vitamin D?
There is no question that we need vitamin D. which is called the sunshine vitamin. This vitamin helps us absorb calcium to keep our bones strong, which keeps us from developing osteoporosis.
And hasn't low levels of vitamin D been linked to other health conditions, such as multiple sclerosis and type 1 diabetes? If we continuously protect ourselves from exposure to the sun, how do we get enough vitamin D to prevent these problems?
There have been numerous studies, and there's no easy solution to how to get this vitamin without exposing ourselves to an increased risk of skin cancer. However, members of the National Council for Skin Cancer Prevention suggest that messages for sun protection remain the same until more conclusive messages about vitamin D can be given. But let's look at the problem anyway. The variables regarding the right amount of vitamin D for each person are extensive. They include factors such as skin color, place of residence, lifestyle, eating habits, and lots of other factors. However, despite these variables, it's known that exposing the skin to UVB radiation produces about 90% of the vitamin D that is available to the body. It's also well known that some foods contain vitamin D, but that for most people, adequate vitamin D intake cannot be achieved from diet alone. Unfortunately, insufficient levels of vitamin D can contribute to the development of many health-related problems. And while these problems are found most frequently amongst those who get little or no sun exposure, those that are housebound or bedridden, the elderly, or those who cover their skin for cultural reasons, it is important that all of us are aware of the need for this vitamin. So on one side, we know we need vitamin D, and then on the flip side, as we have discussed, we know that exposure to UVR increases the chance for developing skin cancer. The question becomes, how can we decide how much exposure is enough to obtain adequate levels of vitamin D and at the same time protect ourselves from developing skin cancers?
Does that mean we should go out in the sun without protection?
Nope. It means that a tiny amount of exposure at the right time of day may take care of the problem. A study from Australia in 2006 concluded that fair-skinned people should be able to obtain sufficient vitamin D from very short periods of unprotected sun exposure to the face, arms, and hands early in the mornings before 10 o'clock or late in the afternoons after 3 o'clock during most times of the year. This short period of time was considered to be about 10 or 15 minutes, again, outside of the peak UV time. In other words, for fair-skinned people, 10 or 15 minutes of exposure to the hands, arms, and face, 3 or 4 times a week, before 10 o'clock in the morning or after 3 p.m. in the afternoon, provided enough vitamin D to remain healthy. Also, please don't be fooled into thinking tanning beds provide a safe way to obtain vitamin D. The tanning bed industry uses this argument as a means to advertise. Vitamin D comes from UVB, which is the very ray that tanning beds do not use, as it is also what they call the burning ray.
So you recommend following the advice from Australia to go outside without sun protection on arms, hands, and face for about 10 minutes before 10 a.m. or after 3 p.m.
That's right. And I would also try to eat foods that are rich in vitamin D. Fortified milk, fish, fortified margarine, cereal, grain bars, liver, beef, or eggs. I'd also check with your doctor if you're concerned and take vitamin D supplements.
Mary, thank you so much for explaining SunAware. Clearly, there's a lot to understand about sun protection and skin cancer prevention, and there's a great deal we can be doing for ourselves, our families, and our communities to help fight this disease.
I just hope that everyone can remember what they need to do to help prevent and detect skin cancer by just following the 5 easy steps of SunAware. Let me restate those 5 steps very quickly before the end of our taping. SunAware is A, avoid unprotected exposure at any time and seek shade. W, wear sun protective clothing, including a hat with a 3-inch brim and sunglasses. A, apply broad-spectrum sunscreen with an SPF 30 or higher and reapply it every 2 hours while exposed. R, routinely check your whole body for changes to your skin and report anything suspicious to your healthcare professional. And E, educate your family and community about the need for sun protection.
In conclusion, for all those who are listening to this CD, remember, be sun aware to be sun safe. I'm Dr. Joyce Starr with Mary Barrow, and we hope you've enjoyed this CD.